You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In November 2011, British businessman Neil Haywood was found dead in a tourist hotel outside the Chinese city of Chongqing. What few people could have guessed at the time was how this case would reveal many layers of corruption and competing factions within the Communist Party, and that it would lead to the downfall of Bo Xilai, a powerful regional Communist Party boss. In their new book, A Death in the Lucky Holiday Hotel, Murder, Money, and an Epic Power Struggle in China, journalists Wenguang Huang and Pin Ho provide a detailed account of the case and its subsequent scandals. It is published by Public Affairs, and I'm very pleased that it brings Mr. Wenguang to our show today. Welcome.
Thank you.
So what were the circumstances of Neil Haywood's death?
The circumstances is kind of a little complicated, but boils down to one thing. It's more of an economic dispute. And another thing is Neil Haywood, he was a British businessman, you know.
I was getting more specific, like how, when they found the body, what did it look like? What was he doing in that hotel? Didn't he live in China?
Yes, he lived in China for many years. He started a consultant business. And then he got very close to this big family, the Bo Xilai family. It was very rare for a foreigner to get this close to a senior level official. So he used these connections and started his own business consulting business and tried to bring the businessmen to China, help them establish connections. And then he got into a dispute with the wife of the Bo Xilai, and then he kept threatening her. That's what the official document said. And then she brought him to Chongqing, where Bo Xilai was the party chief. And then she put him up in the hotel saying that we are going to discuss some business. And then so that night they had some drinks. And then the next day, he was found dead in his hotel.
Now, he was educated in China. He'd come to China and then just decided to stay and even married a Chinese woman?
Yes. He studied international relations. And in 1998, he went to China to study Chinese. And then after he finished his studies, like a lot of students here, they really loved China. And then he stayed on and to teach English to some wealthy Chinese kids. And then that's how he started his business in China when he knew that the party chief, their son, was studying in the UK. So he went back to the UK to get acquainted with the son, and then he got into the circle. That's how he started.
Now, Bo Xilai's son caused a bit of a scandal in England, didn't he? He was living... he's the son of a princeling. We'll get into that whole business about princelings in
right.
a moment. I don't know. Are they called princelings as well, the third generation?
They call them the Little Red Guards because the children of their grandparents are the Red Guards. They founded the Communist China. And these are the third generation princelings. And they most of them are studying abroad.
Your co-author, Pin Ho, came up with the term princeling. And now it's the term that everybody uses in China?
Yeah, he came up with a Chinese version, princeling, meaning the party of princes, because in 1989, it started to emerge as a very formidable political force. And now when you talk about the party of princelings or the princelings, everybody knows it's the children of the senior leaders.
And so they have an advantage over somebody else who's just some smart young person who joins the party and would like to move up?
Those were the princelings, you mean? The princelings, more you have to have the aristocratic lineage. Because
so you're inheriting
your
position in the Communist Party.
Right, part of it. And another small group is the parents. They just moved up during the past 10 years. But a lot of them, their grandparents, they fought with Chairman Mao in the 1940s to establish Communist China, and then they inherited the political...
And that happened with Bo Xilai, although the
exactly.
story gets more complicated. Now, what was Neil Haywood's business relationship with Bo Xilai like, and with Bo Xilai's wife?
he more or less had a business relationship with his wife, because his wife introduced him to some wealthy businessman. So they planned to build some English Tudor-style townhouses in China. You know, Chinese, they find the Western-style houses very attractive. So they want to take advantage of the real estate boom there. So Neil Haywood's job was to bring some investors to China, British investors, to invest in those buildings. And then he was supposed to get a commission from that. So he had a solid business relationship with Gu Kailai.
Well, that doesn't sound illegal in any way. It doesn't sound shady in any way.
It was legal in a way because they were trying to bring investors. But the whole thing is to get the deal going, they had to get, you have to have a permit from the government. To get a permit, you have to use your political connections. So because Gu Kailai and Bo Xilai, the husband and wife, they were very well politically connected. So they tried to get a deal. But unfortunately, the deal fell through because there was a saying that Bo Xilai was going to become, he wanted to rise up in the ranks in the Communist Party. He was worried that it could become a scandal. So he killed the deal. When the deal was killed, Neil Haywood felt like he already had put a lot of efforts in there, and he wanted compensation. And then Gu Kailai did not give him the money. So that's one motive. The other reason is the reason that Gu Kailai wanted to kill Neil Haywood was because he knew too much about what was going on. He handled a lot of the overseas transactions, helped them launder money overseas. And when sometimes it's not a good thing when you know too much, it's like the mafia connections. They felt like if he started to threaten people, he could tell the media about what was going on.
He knew too much, and he was unhappy at the same time.
Exactly.
And so he became a threat. Well, my guest is Wenguang Huang. He and Pin Ho have written a book called A Death in the Lucky Holiday Hotel, Murder, Money, and an Epic Power Struggle in China. At the time of the murder, Bo Xilai was at the height of his power. What was his position within the hierarchy of the Communist Party?
He was a rising political star. He was the political party chief, or in this country we call the mayor of one of the largest Chinese cities. And also he was a promising candidate to enter the Politburo Standing Committee, which is the highest decision-making body. So he was had a very promising career ahead of him.
And what kind of power or influence does the Politburo standing body have in the day-to-day running of China?
They don't manage the day-to-day running, but they decide the policy of the country, the direction of the country. And also, once you enter that body, you're immune to any criminal charges. So that's a very huge privilege.
And is it rare for a mayor and a local party boss to be included in it?
Yes. There were three major cities, Beijing, Shanghai, Chongqing, and Tianjin, four major cities. If you become the party secretary of this huge city, you normally can get a spot on the committee.
What was his life like before he became the party chief of Chongqing?
He, because of the connections that his father had, he moved quite steadily from a county chief all the way to the mayor of a coastal city in China, where he started a lot of the environmental programs, very populist programs, and he was very popular. And then gradually he became the Minister of Commerce of China and came to the United States on several trade missions. And then gradually he was moving up from a smaller city to a major metropolitan city.
But his childhood had been a bit troubled because although his father had fought with Mao, he had been imprisoned by Mao during the Cultural Revolution. And Bo Xilai and his brothers were sent to a work camp. How did that affect his political views?
It's very interesting because during the Cultural Revolution, lots of the princelings, including Bo Xilai, their parents, they were imprisoned. And they suffered tremendously. They were persecuted. And all the children, they suddenly lost all the privileges. And some of them were sent to a camp called the Red Concentration Camp. And then they suffered quite tremendously there. They were forced to do some physical labor. And some of them just were sent to the rural areas, like the current party chief of China. They all they have gone through the same thing. But ironically, for Bo Xilai, you would assume that he was so traumatized by the sufferings during the Cultural Revolution. But then, when he was in Chongqing, he started to implement some of the policies that Mao advocated during the Cultural Revolution. That's what we believe, that he was really didn't really mean to do that. It was just a populist approach. Right now in China, when the economic development has resulted in such disparity in income, the discontent among the public is getting huge. I think they felt very nostalgic toward the Mao era. So Bo Xilai started this program.
As a kind of neo-Maoist, but that makes him a populist in this case.
Yes.
In this country, we call a populist. So he represents the kind of left wing of the Communist Party, because
yes.
The Communist Party has the full spectrum. Although it's one party, it really could be described as two or three parties, couldn't it?
I think that it's the party on the whole is they try to stay as a uniform image, but within different people, some people are more pro-Mao, more the leftist, and just like this in this country, you know, every party have different factions. But in one thing is they all, we have to make it clear that they're all populist all the way. They share the same ideology, but then just use different approaches. Even those people who are calling for political reforms in China, they haven't done anything. It's just a way to win the hearts of the people, because people are so disillusioned with the party.
Well, he started a campaign called Singing Red Smashing Black.
Right.
And that was an anti-corruption campaign?
Yes. What he did was Singing Red, when everybody should sing revolutionary songs. For example, the sky in the communist China is brighter. Socialism is good. It was very popular when I was growing up. We sang that all the time. And it was a way to encourage people to have faith in the Communist Party. On the other hand, because during the recent years, crimes rates have gone up. And then he started a whole campaign against organized crimes. But then one thing that he used as crimes sometimes to target his political opponents.
How was his campaign and the fact that he was kind of a neo-Maoist received by the upper echelon of the Communist Party?
Initially, they all supported him because the whole country was struggling with a problem to win people's heart. They felt like, and then people were disillusioned with the rising crime rates. And this one was very popular among the public. So the senior leadership, they were very supportive, and many of them they visited Chongqing and heaped praises on his program. But gradually, they became scared because they've noticed that 5,000 people that were imprisoned, a lot of the business people lost their money overnight. They felt like if they allowed Bo Xilai to rise up in the rank to enter this decision-making body, he could implement similar programs. Their friends or their own economic interests could be jeopardized. That's why they teamed up. They decided to get rid of him.
But as you said, Bo Xilai was popular with the general public. He was known for beautifying his city and also for promoting soccer.
Yes, and in the city of Dalian, and then that was the soccer city. And he established the soccer commercial, the professional soccer club there. And then he believed that soccer was a beautiful business card for the city, to promote the city. And he introduced a lot of the environmental initiatives and planted a lot of grass. And, people still, they remember very fondly of the programs there.
We have not talked yet about Wang Lijun, and we will come to him after we take a little break. He is the police commissioner who implemented Bo Xilai's policies. My guest is Wang Wang Huang. He and Pin Ho have written a book called A Death in the Lucky Holiday Hotel, Murder, Money, and an Epic Power Struggle in China. It is published by Public Affairs. Stay with us for more. We are back with Wen Guang Huang, who's a writer, journalist, translator. His articles and translations have been published in the Wall Street Journal, Asia, the Chicago Tribune, the Paris Review, the Asia Literary Review, the Christian Science Monitor. And he is also the author of a memoir called The Little Red Guard. He is co-author with Mr. Pin Ho, a Chinese journalist and writer, whose book China's Princelings was the first to coin the phrase to describe that generation of children of Chinese revolutionaries who now hold so many key political and business posts in the country. They have collaborated on a book called A Death in the Lucky Holiday Hotel, Murder, Money, and an Epic Power Struggle in China. It is published by Public Affairs. So let's talk a bit about Wang Lijun. In order to enforce his anti-crime and corporation and corruption campaigns, Bo Xilai used Wang Lijun as his as his police chief and deputy mayor.
Yes, he was hired as the police chief first, and then since the anti-crime campaign that this police chief implemented was so successful, and then he promoted him to be the deputy mayor.
And he had such a reputation that he came to be known as China's Elliot Ness.
Yes. And also because there was a movie made about him based on his experience. And he was called the Iron Blood Spirit of China because his tough anti-crime initiative. There were many stories about how he fought with the mafia leaders, and then he himself had been wounded several times. So he was very famous.
But he also strong-armed people. He, the way he interrogated people to get confessions is something that only Dick Cheney might admire.
Exactly. He was, we didn't use, I don't know whether they used waterboarding, but they did use a lot of different things. For example, they call it a tiger bench. Like they would tie people down on the bench and then try to pull them apart. And then sometimes they hunt people upside down. And then they use all kinds of torture tactics to force people to confess. And also there were many things about after the people got arrested, they confiscated the assets without even giving them a list, and then the assets just disappeared.
Was he well known before he was hired by Bo Xilai?
Yes, he was well known in northeastern part of China because he himself was named the national hero. His anti-crime initiatives were very popular. And there was a movie I told you, The Maid, about him, and that's how people knew about him.
And now we come to somebody you have referred to, Gu Kailai, Bo Xilai's wife, an accomplished lawyer and the daughter of a prominent general. So she would be the equivalent of a princeling, a princess or something.
Yes.
Can you tell us about her? What was her career as a lawyer like? Didn't she consult on a case in the United States and then write a book about how to win a case in the United States?
Exactly. He was a very accomplished lawyer. You know, during the Cultural Revolution, China abolished the legal system. There were no lawyers. And she was one of the first group of lawyers who were officially licensed, who set up her own practice, legal practice, in the 1990s. And then when a Chinese laundry detergent manufacturer, they lost some business deal with the U.S., and then they were accused of infringing on the intellectual property rights. So Gu Kailai actually came to the United States and defended the Chinese company and won the case. And after she went back to China, she wrote a book saying how to win a lawsuit in China. And then also she criticized the American legal system for not being efficient. He used the O.J. Simpson case, just saying everybody knew that he might have killed it, but that they dragged it on for hours and hours. And little did she know that 10 years later, she herself was one of the victims of the Chinese legal system.
Now, Bo Xilai had been married previously, had the son who was in London or in England studying.
He had two sons. During his previous marriage, he had a son who studied at Columbia University here in New York City and went back and then worked for an investment firm. But they were alienated. He has another son with Gu Kailai, who was a very handsome playboy type of guy who studied in Oxford, was known for his parties than for his studies. And he came to study at Harvard.
And He pretty much dumped an earlier wife for Gu Kailai. Is that common for ranking communist officials to leave their wives for younger women?
Not common in his generation, but it was common for his father's generation. In the book, I mentioned specifically, I did a comparison, like father, like son. His father used to marry a woman who saved his life, but when he started rising the ranks in the army, he dumped the first wife and married the wife who is Bo Xilai's mother. And then Bo Xilai actually did the same thing. And then both women met similar fate.
And would you say that their marriage, the marriage of Bo Xilai and Gu Kailai, was a successful one?
No, I think the first 5 or 6 years was seen as such a compatible couple. They're both princelings and princesses, and then they were both dashingly handsome, and then they were both successful in their own areas. But then there were rumors about Bo Xilai's womanizing activities, which is very common in China nowadays. A lot of government officials, they have mistresses, and that one has actually dented their marriage, and that causes a lot of distress for Gu Kailai.
After Neil Haywood was found dead in his hotel room, the police issued a statement that he had died as a result of alcohol poisoning. How was the investigation into his death conducted?
They the four police officers, they were all friends of the police chief Wang Lijun, we just mentioned. And they went up there and they just did a initial testing, and then they found out that there was no any other primary signs of cyanide or anything. And also, they did find some of the fingerprints that could pinpoint Gu Kailai might be the person who caused the death. But they were so afraid of offending the party chief's wife, so they just wrote down the conclusion that he died of alcohol consumption.
And then Gu Kailai convinced Neil Haywood's Chinese wife to have him cremated immediately?
Yes, his wife, Neil Haywood's wife, arrived in Chongqing, and Gu Kailai had a conversation with her, basically telling her that they should have it, cremated without an autopsy. We don't know whether there was any deals going on. Maybe, they promised her some help, but there was the rumor who have not substantiated.
Did Wang tell Bo Xilai about his wife's involvement with Haywood's murder?
Right now, from what we have seen so far, is that he didn't tell him all the way until 3 months later.
And then he was removed as police chief.
Yes. Before he was removed, they got into a terrible conflict.
Which involved Bo Xilai slapping his face.
Right. He went up there and then said that your wife actually is implicated in this murder, but I'm going to help you, protect you. And then Bo Xilai went to check with his wife. His wife said, oh, he actually framed me. And then Bo Xilai went back and said, I've been so nice to you. I've promoted you several times. How could you do this to me? You are such an ungrateful bastard. That's the word he's supposed to use. And he slapped him on the face. That slap actually triggered a series of events later on.
My guess is when Wang Huang, he and Pin Ho have written a book called A Death in the Lucky Holiday Hotel, Murder, Money, and an Epic Power Struggle in China. It's published by Public Affairs. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. So in February 2012, Wang went to the U.S. consulate to seek asylum. Was he afraid for his life?
Yes, because before he went to the consulate, he had heard that Bo Xilai was trying to get rid of him.
Well, he had been slapped by Bo Xilai already.
That right, and he lost his job. And he also heard that Bo Xilai has plotted assassination also because the same reason. He knew too much about Bo Xilai, and then Bo Xilai was worried that he could be a liability.
Did Wang's defection to the U.S. consulate take Bo Xilai and other communist officials off guard?
Totally off guard. They were taken by surprise. That's why Bo Xilai was, when he heard about it, he was so nervous that it could blow into an international scandal. He actually mobilized the armed police and sent them to another city where the American consulate was and tried to use the excuse saying there might be a bomb inside the American consulate. He wanted to allowing them to get the armed police to get in and to kidnap Wang Lijun so that he wouldn't tell the Americans anything about the murder.
Did the U.S. accept Wang's plea for asylum?
No, actually, for two reasons. I think that when Wang Lijun's defection took place a week before, the Chinese president, who is currently the party chief of China, was supposed to visit the United States. So if the U.S. granted Wang Lijun, it would have jeopardized U.S.-China relations, making this an awkward situation. I think the other thing is they underestimated Wang Lijun's ability, because they just assumed that he was a regional police officer. He wouldn't have too much of intelligence value. And also, he acted very agitated, was incoherent. And I think that's one of the reasons they didn't feel like he had any intelligence value, and then they denied asylum.
So he wound up going to Beijing in hopes of what? Convincing the top authorities that Bo Xilai and his wife were involved in this murder?
Exactly. He did two things. He knew that without getting the asylum, he had to leave Chongqing. Once he went to Beijing, he would use different kind of the facts to persuade Bo's opponents to believe that Bo was the one. The critical thing is he told them that Bo had plotted to unseat the current Chinese chairman. That got all the opponents worked up.
But Bo had supporters within the highest ranks of the Communist Party as well. So did
exactly.
That split the rulers of China at the time?
Yes, greatly. And then we just found out while writing the book that the Chinese president's chief of staff was actually, we call the deep throat. And he was a family friend of Bo Xilai. That was the reason, between March and July, there were two conflicting voices. The Chinese president, because he was influenced by the chief of staff, he kept mentioning, he said, oh, the Wang Lijun's scandal was an isolated incident, meaning like nobody's going to be affected except them. But then later on, they changed position and they started to say, oh, Bo Xilai was responsible. This was a direct result of this conflict between the two factions.
And there was a trial. Bo Xilai's wife was
yes.
tried.
In August.
And Wang Lijun as well?
Yes, and then 2 months after that.
Now, could we say these trials were fair?
No, because the Ku Kai Lai trial, ironically, such a complex case, the trial only lasted 7 hours. And then during the whole trial, there were no witnesses was called. There was no cross-examination. And then it was supposed to be a public trial, but they only picked 140 people, selected government officials and the state-run media representatives. So it was very fast, and there were so many issues they didn't even address.
But they also extended the discussion to corruption charges. They didn't just deal with the murder.
With Gu Kailai, the murder, they totally isolated the whole corruption charges. They focused on the murder. But with Wang Lijun, they extended to the corruption charge.
And because in China, corruption investigations are a political weapon?
Yes, because nobody's immune. You talk from the village chief all the way to the mayor. Everybody, if you dig deeper into their finances, everybody has some corruption deals going on. So that's why it's a very effective weapon to get rid of a political opponent.
But this case and the subsequent scandals were kind of unique in China, weren't they, in that they were largely covered and discussed by the media both internationally and within the country?
Yes.
I mean, it was covered by Chinese television, CCTV.
Well, the CCTV only gave a very, 5-10 minutes, that kind of very short coverage, and then briefly just saying what the charges are very briefly. And then Xinhua News Report issued a very detailed statement. That was it. But I think during this scandal, the international media, they are playing a huge part because they were able to cover it real time.
And social media and internet also
yes.
Allowed people to find out what was going on.
Exactly. And also social media allowed people, sometimes when people saw the New York Times coverage, they immediately translated or posted some of the stuff on social media. People were able to read it too.
So are we sure that Gu Kailai actually committed this murder?
I'm not sure. I think more and more people are skeptical now, even though after it happened in August, because there were so many things that the court did not address. Some of the basic things, for example, was Neil Haywood killed by cyanide. Did Gukalai kill him with cyanide?
Wouldn't you be able to find that in his ashes?
No. Right now, the Chinese government said that they found cyanide in the blood sample. But the thing is, the blood samples have been taken out of the system. The police office had removed twice, and one time they stored in somebody's refrigerator. There were no primary signs when the police first arrived at the scene. They did initial examination. And we talked with some doctors. They said if you die of cyanide, it's very easy to catch because your body could turn purplish. But there was no primary signs of cyanide.
So if you talk about screwing up the O.J. Simpson case, this is total police mess up. On purpose, you think?
I think on purpose. And then also because we believe that the police chief has played a very dubious role in this one, even though he was in charge of investigating the case. But he himself was actually a participant and also helped plan the whole murder.
Wu Lijun?
Wang Lijun.
Wang Lijun.
Yes.
And he has also been found guilty of some crimes?
He has been found guilty of corruption and also to cover up the crime because the court did not pursue his active role in that because he himself had achieved some merits by giving a lot of evidence against Bo Xilai. That's why the court never pursued his role.
And that's led to a lot of conspiracy theories.
Exactly.
Including one that Haywood was actually an operative for British intelligence, MI6?
Yes, and actually this is some of the part is being proved because they said that the Wall Street Journal has talked with people, New York Times, and we got some insider stories saying that Neil Haywood was, even though he did not work, there was no evidence to show that he worked for MI6, but he might be an informant, unpaid informant, because it was so hard to find a foreigner who could be so close to a senior leader's family.
This past November, Bo Xilai was formally kicked out of the Chinese Communist Party. Do you think he might be facing a trial sometime in the future?
He was supposed to face a trial in the next couple of weeks, but we haven't heard anything.
And other people have been brought down as well by the scandal.
A lot of people have been brought down, people who worked with him in Chongqing, and a lot of the police officers who worked with on the anti-crime initiatives have been replaced.
Do you think this scares the political bosses in other regions of China?
It does. It's almost like when we were researching the book, we got the conclusion, I don't know what other officials are going to think. It's almost like sooner or later, you're going to end up in prison if you are not careful enough and if you offend too many people, and then other people are going to team up and lock you up.
Wenguang Huang, Wenguang Huang, and Pin Ho have written a book called A Death in the Lucky Holiday Hotel, Murder, Money, and an Epic Power Struggle in China. It is published by Public Affairs. And my great thanks to Mr. Wenguang for being on our show today.
Thank you very much. Thank you.